Ohne große Umschweife, willkommen in Digital Courage Zelt.
Nein, nochmal. Digital Courage. Das E wird mitgesprochen.
Also, it's Digital Courage. You have to, or Digital Courage, as we say in German, you have to pronounce the last E. It's not a silent E. We're very German in our pronunciation here. So I hand over the stage. Thank you for the warm welcome. I hope you didn't promise too much. Yay! Thanks a lot. When you're here in front of the people, it really helps to have an audience. Being warmed up and being welcomed, it really helps because I'm shy and I really don't like talking as much. Jens knows me. He can attest to that. I read that because I didn't know what else to put there, but actually something, the audio is a bit bad. Maybe I need a different mic. I'm not trying to hold the usual talk to this, to that, like have a checklist what to do in order to succeed at founding a club or an NGO. I actually founded a lot of them. You know, one of them, this is the one that operates this tent, the Digital Courage or Digital Courage. Obviously, I made a lot of mistakes. I founded a lot of other them. Just think of the CCC, the Chaos Computer Club, just our founding documents. The lawyers were laughing at it. It's obviously not a great legal text, but I just want to talk about what actually goes into founding one of these clubs or an NGO. Just even the question, do you want to have an association or a club, or would you rather have a company? And it really depends on how you want to structure your work. If someone has an idea that they want to put out into the world and have other people working along, there are many ways to organize that. And it doesn't have to be an NGO or a structure, but it could also be a cooperative or a mutual corporation. They're a great idea. They're actually great. There are definite layers and rights that you have with regards to participation of the members of the association. So I could imagine putting this into the form of a workshop. We can have a lot of back and forth with questions and answers. Anyone who wants to now sit down, please duck a little bit so you're not in front of the camera. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer. I just felt my way into it because I had to, obviously. But I just want to share my hard-earned wisdom so the younger folks here just can profit from that and not make the same mistakes again. Especially with the registered club, you know, just when you try to put out a new set of bylaws, you look at the ones from a different club that you know. We basically took it from the mailbox of the club, the Chaos Computer Club, and replaced Chaos Computer Club by our name back then, which was called Fürbot. And we basically just did copy paste and search and replace, and then we had to do it again because we failed on the formalities. It was a nice story, but it wasn't actually helpful because, yeah, I want to start from the beginning. What do we want to do? You sit together, sometimes you have a joint, sometimes you have alcohol, sometimes you're sober. I'm usually one of the sober people. That's why people are surprised why I am all for legalization of weed. But you're trying to come up with ideas about all the things that you want to do in this organization or in this club. You want to be a non-profit, for example. You want to be registered with the tax administration. And it's actually easier. You put it into the bylaws that you want to be a non-profit. And that makes it easier to be accredited as that. But you still have to take the extra step and register with the tax authorities in order to get that status. And then you take all the things that are legally required and take them from the wording of the law and then put it into your bylaws, and you are being audited by the tax authorities years and years after you've found it. And then they're going through all of the things that you're doing. For example, if you put in you want to work with young people, for example, and then they look at you and they're saying, well, you look a little older. Are you really doing youth works anymore? And then they're trying to take away your non-for-profit because you've grown older, and maybe the people you work with have also grown older and you haven't found any new ones. You can obviously put anything in that purpose of your non-for-profit, and then it would be bad, because that would be a reason to take away the tax exemption for the non-for-profit NGOs. That happened to one German club called the ATTAC, and it doesn't happen from that point on, but rather retroactively. You have to then redo all of your tax work, and then you have to pay. They now have two sets of books. They do one that is basically done the way that an NGO or a registered non-profit, and as a non-registered club that doesn't have any tax exemption, just for the case if that happens to them, so they're prepared and they don't have to redo anything. So my advice is keep the set of things that you have as a purpose in their law, so you can check and audit that every year and make sure that you're still fulfilling your officially declared purpose. So we had the problem that we had the same goals or aims that we aspired to as the CCC, and then we had to morph that a lot and change it so it fits better for us. And we had this other organization that we were talking, it was called Teilbündnis, and they were asking us to do all of this legal framework for them, because, for example, just having a march in the streets that like a demonstration already costs €500,000 euros. And our problem was, we checked all of this, we had a lot of lawyers look at it, and it took a lot of effort because we weren't sure that we could even do that. And it was only possible because we had a very thought out set of bylaws where we had a lawyer that we trust a lot. And just because they have this, we had this great set, we could actually do that for Unteilbar. And if that didn't have worked out, then we would have had to do all of that same as a normal for-profit company. So just if you have only one goal that you want to do, like running your hack space, then really put only that in and nothing else, because anything else will hurt you. So think about your goal.
If you have someone who doesn't just pretend as if he would know bookkeeping, accounting, but also actually knows how to do this and does it, that's a big difference. I think we have, and I think the CCC has had quarrels with the tax authorities. From now on, we actually do it right. Kind of a silent agreement, because they didn't do it right. The person who was supposed to do it couldn't do it, or just wrote a great software to do the accounting that was supposed to do it for them. That's a bit of a sickness in the hacker community. So if there's someone and you actually want to have the tax exempt status, and it's supposed to be deductible from the tax, and that's within your statutes, and you want to do that, what was I trying to tell you? Then do that. But then also just write that in what you need in your statutes. Everything else is annoying. Other than that, it's annoying anyway to have a tax registers tax exempt status, because there's always a sort of Damocles. Did I do everything right? Specifically for the leadership, always think about, can we do that? Does that work? Actually, for most hack spaces and projects that are actually a hobby, despite the fact that there are four cultural reasons, it's easier to write in that we are registered communal and write it in, but not go for the tax exempt status. They handle large sums too. If you have mixed things, also some company stuff, it helps you monetarily, but usually it's not worth the trouble you have with it. Try to be the registered tax exempt status, but hey, give the tax authorities the monies and you have your peace. Get someone who knows how to do accounting, loves to do it, and actually does it. Does anybody have questions? I don't want to just talk at you. You know, those who know me know that I'm very good at just talking at you. No? All right. So, to confuse you a bit more with the founding of an NGO, just think about which, I'm sorry, Mehrwertsteuersätze, which tax variations you need to think about. I just want a number, 100, 120, someone says 3, someone else 2, okay, 12, that's a good guess, but too much, 5, also well, okay, it's 4. Four tax variations, 7 and 19%, all of you know. Then we also have 7% again and 0%, because we are a registered NGO. Everything that's for the ideal work is at 0% because a Körperschaftssteuer is not in. 19% for everything, like all the merchandise we are selling, or if a Hackspace is building great hardware that somebody wants and we sell them, it's 19%. If we build this hardware and we're the only ones that do this for a specific political project, it's 7% because there is the registered status again, the tax exemption, so all the books that we're selling, 7%. We don't sell food, so that doesn't matter. So we have 0 for the political idealized part, for the business part, the 7%, for the things in the kind of company section, and what's the word again? The Erwerbsbetrieb, like company, is 7% for books and 19% for all other goods. Just know that you need to differentiate that. I didn't know that for a very long time. I always thought that we are good with 7%, 19%, and 0%. We're all we do everything right until someone finally told us what's really right. Fortunately, we managed to settle this well that we didn't need to pay a fine. There is a mic. Somebody needs a mic coming. Now from the audience, a question also for the rest of the group, because I think I know. What does idealized mean? What's commercial and what's the gray area in between? The speaker. The words are different. The word commercial doesn't exist in Germany, so strike out that word. It's about a business that you're doing. Also, if you're not making money, but if you're regularly handling money, it's corporate. It's business. The word commercial does not exist. And idealized is everything that's in the statues, what we're doing for the ideals of the NGO, what we're doing, work politically, campaigns. For instance, if we're in front of the government and put up some banners and ask people, you know, I need to be careful to not ramble here. You know the privacy dongles that we are doing? It's a USB stick with the Tor browser. We did those to Schäuble, Schiele, to give it to some politician to say, look, with that you can do Vorratsdatenspeicherung, large data richness. And this USB stick, we needed to adjust it. Just put the software on. And I guess we sold it for like 15 euros in the shop. So, because we wanted to refinance the 100 sticks that we did, and the CT, which is a magazine, we had a TV format where they talk about things in IT, which come up in the third programs, and they wrote this thing. We were flooded by orders, and those would be calculated at 7% tax, because that's our idealized work. We're not doing them to make money. We're making money. That's not the point. But their purpose is to bring across the political message, and that's why they're only taxed at 7%. Normally, this would be 19%. If I would sell this at as a company, 19%. As an NGO, idealized work, 7%. This is crazy, I know, but I just wanted to tell you, to scare you a bit, what it could mean if you look at those things as a registered. And we are buying them at 19%, right? We're selling them at 7%. So the tax authorities is paying us money to sell those things. That's a nice little story on the side. We had to fight with tax authorities once so that we could stay this way, that we are allowed to continue. And we kind of settled. And for that, the buses to drive to the demonstrations, 20 buses organized throughout Germany from different cities. There, in the end, they taxed us higher. For that, you need to pay 19%. So organizing buses to demonstrations, where I would say, hey, but that's totally idealized work. It's in the statutes. We're doing something. All cool? No. That says, the travel is in front. And I think that's crazy. But, well, we said this isn't our hobby, to call financial jurisdictions, that other people should do that, so we just accepted it. Actually, for all the t-shirts that you're wearing, most of you guys, some are wearing logos or political sayings. The t-shirts that are made only for campaigns, we need to sell at 19%. Even there, the tax authority says the element of clothing is primary, and what's on it is secondary. I think it's crazy, but looking at it from a perspective of a tax person, that seems to be normal. And actually, I'm not going to discuss with them. That's just how it's done. Okay. Other than that, I'm looking around. Is an eyebrow raising? Is there a question? Yeah. There comes the microphone from the audience. I have a question to the point before. So through the financial judges, you can give them the statutes, so they check it for you, and then they send it back. The speaker, yeah, that's right, thank you. If you have something that's registered, it makes sense that before you officially found it, you go to the tax authorities, you send them your statutes, they actually check them, and they tell you, yeah, it's probably going to work for you, but that's not legally secure, especially because laws can change. So you know that's how it's done. You go to the tax authorities for a round before you found, but if you do it spontaneously, that's more difficult. From the audience, we got ours back with a few comments and the helpful notice that we can officially do that, but then we would need to get a lawyer. The speaker, that's fascinating. There are rules. You can you can file it once and you get it back, but there's also the option to ask someone in the tax authorities to write a Gutachten, which is like to write a report. There are tricks. You don't officially file it because then it's filed, but rather, I don't really know, just to check, not to actually file it, not specifically say we're going to do this, especially if you're dealing with bureaucracy. Before you actually file something, let it go through their heads. It's like talking with policemen. Don't just say what you're thinking, but it has to go three times through your head and needs to be filtered, because police people have a certain way to react, and they need to react to certain trigger words. specific trigger words will prompt police people to do something, whether they want to or not. Jokes with police people, you really shouldn't do that if you're not actually in front, if you haven't drunk a lot of beers with them, because they need to watch you for hours at your demonstrations, then you're almost brothers. But I actually, once my house was raided, I like to tell this because it sounds so cool. When my house was raided, when I said to the police person, bye, until next time, he was like, what? Because for him, it means a person was raided, they didn't find anything, all good, says until next time, so he has to be a criminal or else they wouldn't have a reason to return. And I was like, no. I learned if police doesn't know something and wants to understand it, that was about mailboxes at that time, they didn't know that, then the authorities make a raid to learn. And since we're going to do new things again, I need to assume that I'm going to get raided again because they want to learn again. And the answer, his answer was, no. Next time, we're just going to call you.
And that was the way it was. We've never been raided again. I'll tell you another one of these anecdotes. A few months later, the phone was ringing. There was a guy called Miller. He was asking, my son has to do a work experience for his school. Can he do it with you? And I said, Mr. Miller, you were raiding my home 2 months ago, at least your colleagues did. And he said, yeah, I know. They really enjoyed it. So that's why I was asking you. So that's, I was smoking again after that raid, but that really helped, you know. We actually took his son in to have him do his work experience with us. Where were we? NGOs or clubs. Okay, trigger words, tax administration. Yeah, you have to find the right word that you can use without it triggering an action. You need to avoid those in order to get information without triggering something that you don't want. And sometimes it makes sense to just involve a lawyer, a good lawyer. Okay, another anecdote. First police raid on us. They actually demanded that we had to print the bylaws. It was on a needle printer and it went line by line, took forever. And we had like pages and pages of our statutes that we gave us. These club rules, that are they all from you? He was looking at it and said, if I had written that, that would have been shorter. And that basically said everything about the club. So that basically, that's why we hired him, to make it shorter and better. So yeah, short rules. Think hard about if a club is the right thing for you, or a registered association, a registered nonprofit. Think about it hard. What is the right format for you? A nonprofit is essentially a company. If it has to work well and if it works, you take money in, you spend money, you sometimes have to pay people, like in salary positions, just so there is some structure and organization. I don't know how many. There is a certain limit to the number of nerds you can put into a room without giving them a salaried manager that works. Even here at the club, we have that. So sometimes we have very spontaneous federations that work together on a thing like a demonstration, and then someone said, yeah, let's just open up an account. And then the tax authorities come and whatever you got into that account, you then suddenly have to pay taxes on. And then it may actually be viable or a very good idea to have a registered nonprofit and to found the club ahead of the time, because it has a lot of implications on the tax exemptions that you have and the rules that apply. So it makes sense to give yourself this frame, as I call it. I like that word. A certain structure in which you want to work, and talk about it without preconceptions. I never saw the Marx Brothers. I know your people flog you for that, but Groucho Marx says, I would never want to be part of a club that has me as a member. And same for me. I wouldn't want to found an association that will have me. I'm an old school punk, and I detest associations and clubs. If we had thought about it better, or longer, or harder, we would have never called ourselves Fervod. I really like that word. Does anybody know what it means? Okay, give the mic to the guys in the first row. He gave the correct, very long form. Give an applause to Jens Ohlig. He used to be our PR guy, also for the CCC. As a joke, we had another acronym. It's a club about encryption and unencrypted flow of data analogously and digitally, basically. And it was basically a gag or a joke in the moment when we were walking down the stairs to the lawyer. And the guy who came up with it was a postal employee. The ones who actually deal with physical letters. He worked there. They had these mnemonics, short forms in order to remember certain things. Yeah, he has a very complicated one that doesn't make any sense for you. We did something similar, because of that long form that was obviously stupid. We have this long name, we have a super organization when we do, for example, a certain activity that we want to do with 50 other organizations. And what happens is that all the others get named in the press, for example, because we're too long and no one wants to write out that name. Same for fundraising. If you depend on donations and public money, you need to sound serious. You need to have a name that is catchy. Don't pick something stupid unless you say you're not interested in any outside spotlight. If you're in the background and no one ever sees you, fine. But this is so much better. I was at a concert one day. It was a guy who was playing guitar all the time, and while he was playing, someone else was constructing a set of drums around him, and then he suddenly switches in the middle of the song between guitar to drum, and then afterwards back again, and I'm dreaming of that, just with the mic. Dynamics. There's a question in the back, I'll take that. The person in the back. The young guy with the intelligent set of glasses. Jeopardy melody. Hi. I wanted to ask if you could elaborate a little bit on mutual organizations. The only one I've been a part of is PEP. The founding of that was interesting. It was right on stage at the Republika, a German event for politicians, journalists, and digital people. Someone was tweeting, he made it, he's at the stage, and then they suddenly pulled me up onto the stage, and yeah. I think this is a very interesting idea. these mutual organizations have a very strict legal structure. There are levels of audit, and they try to check that. And cooperatives are for people who love bureaucracies. But it sounds negative, but actually I like them. I think they're a good idea. The Digital Courage, our club that we have, is a very democratically organized club. But then again, me and a colleague, we have always been re-elected again and again and again. And that may be a good thing, because there's a lot of coherence, and you can depend on that, and it works. But in some organizations, you probably want more turnover, or you have to have one. And yeah, Frank, you actually looked into that more. He actually founded one. From an organizational point of view, it's more like a non-profit, but in a legal sense, it's more like a company. That's the shortest way to put it. But there is still like a controlling instance. It's like a club is actually auditing itself. There are different people in there. There's the president, and there's the person with the money, and then the one who keeps the notes, and sometimes there are people who advise them. But from the membership of your organization, you elect your leaders, and the German people tend to give them a lot of shackles. But it would actually be better to trust the people, similar to how you do it in politics. You give the people you vote into power a lot of authority, and then you just let them loose. But you control them later on, and don't you check what they do, and then you don't re-elect. But you shouldn't really try to shackle them to certain ways of working, because that doesn't really work. Or there are people who are born to be bureaucrats. There are certain people who enjoy this kind of work, that basically are mediators. They try to figure out the common denominator of what the people in the club want. It's normal that there are differing opinions on things. Whenever you have a certain set of people, you will have N plus one opinions. But when you found a club, you have to have a crystal clear idea of what it should be and what you want to do with it. For example, that you want to help with hack spaces, and it should have this and that dimension, and should never exceed that amount of people, and so on and so on. You can put all of that into writing. But with Fürbot, the predecessor of Digital Courage, it was more born out of curiosity what you can do with people, what that can lead to. You wanted workshop character here, so I'm gonna do that. I'm the president of a club. This is the elected representative of the club. But I'm with Wikimedia Germany. Obviously, that's the NGO behind Wikipedia. We have 150 people working there, mid-sized corporation really. And then you want to hire someone who has management experience. And this CEO, let's call him, is, he gets a normal contract. And on the annual convention of the members of the club, you could technically fire him. But he's the one with a normal working contract. And then there is the presiding body, let's call it. Those are the ones that are being elected by the membership. Also in an advising council of another body that is an NGO that is looking at the spending of public funding. And there I'm just advising and controlling. Another comment. We are a very small club, maybe 20 people, more or less. We are completely anarchistic. Everybody does it to their best, yeah, ways and means and opinions. And the leadership is actually more in an advisory role, and that actually works well. But yeah, I want to get back to that example with the CCC, so the Chaos Computer Club. We wanted to have the research as a non-profit just to have a sort of structure so that we could all do what we wanted to do and that we have an entity that speaks for us. There were obviously, or there were people in the history of the club that were really against having that registered nonprofit for that. And this anarchistic idea was it was foundational to what we did. But now we're more like a corporation and a club that has millions in revenue every year. And I was actually against the strong structure, and I'm very happy to work with Digital Courage, and that's a very interesting way of working, and it works well. But it also works the other way. If you have like a very anarchistic structure that doesn't have a lot of structure, it can just work, you know. Obviously, it has its downsides, so sometimes we tend to burn out people with that, but it amazing things can happen from that.
Please give me more things or questions. There's someone here in front, and until the microphone is there, we're going to sing together the Jeopardy music. Okay, question from the audience. So my club has an issue with the leadership, and my club needs leadership. Every club needs it, and we have a meeting of all the members. We elect it, and it wasn't great. The selection wasn't great. The people who wanted to lead, the majority didn't like them. But we were in front of the choice: nobody does it, or somebody does it. And there's the question: how, if you just have a small group of 20 people, how can you generate someone or bring them on the way that next time, I don't know, with a bit of charisma, social engineering skills, that there's someone like that and not a cliche nerd who does not have any people skills? The speaker, that's the question of all questions. I think for decades in the CCC, we were looking for leaders, didn't find any, and we were very happy about the people who did it and didn't annoy us too much. And some actually, that's really fascinating, have in the background done a lot of work. You never saw them in the front lines because it didn't matter that the leaders were visible. But like in the early years when Wau Holland moved away from Hamburg, there were some difficulties until at some point, yeah, I don't know who is the leadership of the CCC, I have to say. I didn't notice. So it can work. Main thing is somebody's in that position. So then that person is there, and the others have to look to work around that. I have a family in the country, a huge clan, sisters, cousins, and in the countryside you have to celebrate, that's how it's done. And one of my cousins, she couldn't lead a household. And all the women, countryside, that kind of rural area, some are very progressive, and celebrations, the women came, cleaned up, cooked, and it was a great celebration. And that's how it works with clubs. We have great planning, but what's actually happening is a lot of improvisation. People are actually doing something, look where there's something missing, and that stands. Hey, now we have leadership, we don't need to care. That's something you have to feel responsible yourself. I think you have to say, what if I do it, if there's no one to do it? Or am I someone who wants to get along well with people? If I always told everybody that I don't like them, of course they don't elect me, or I wasn't first choice. That's just how it works, and you have to learn that. And it's not a gift. You're not given that. You need to show some grit. So now it starts to rain really heavily. It's getting louder in the tent. It sounds like applause all the time. And yeah, thank you so much.